This is an audio-only version, offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk.
Our penultimate speaker, Elena Magrini, is a researcher at Centre for Cities interested in education, inequality and migration. She has previously worked at the New Local Government Network, where she covered employment and skills and community asset transfers. She will now discuss the future of work in cities in the UK.
So far we've been talking about the applications of artificial intelligence within sectors. But what actually is going to happen in terms of jobs? So this is what we're going to look at today in my presentation. So at Centre for Cities, we look at the biggest urban areas in Britain, so 63 cities. And as part of our annual work, we produce an annual health checks of cities. So we look at the economic performance. And every year we have a special chapter on a topic that is really important on the agenda. And this year was the future of work. And so how artificial intelligence and automation are going to affect the labour market. To do so, we looked at work done by Nesta at the national level, and we tried to understand how different trends, so artificial intelligence, automations, but also demographic change, urbanizations, and other technological change are going to affect the labor market. What does it mean for occupations? Are they going to see a job decline or are they seeing job growth? And what are the implications more widely for different cities across the country? Because of course, the economic layout of different cities is different. So, first of all, we looked at jobs that are going to be displaced by automation and artificial intelligence. Overall, around of all the 330 occupations that there are in the UK, 35 are at high risk of automations. So, in 35 occupations are very likely to be displaced by 2030. Those are usually very routinized and low-skilled occupations. Some represent quite clearly specific industrial sectors. So for example, storage and warehousing is at high risk of job displacement. But some others are occupations that are more widely spread across industries. So for example, administration, customer services, sales assistants. And if we want to look at the top 10 occupations that are most at risk of job displacement, we can see again, there tend to be lower skill, elementary occupation, storage, sales assistance, customer services. However, altogether, this job displacement, we create 21% of jobs around the countries are going to be displaced by 2030 or are at high risk of being displaced by 2030. So this means 3.6 million of jobs across urban Britain. But as you can see from the map, there is a lot of variation across the countries. The darker dots represent a higher risk of jobs and automations in these cities, whereas the lighter dots represent cities that are relatively more protected and insulated from job displacement. So if we take, for example, a couple of cities, we can see Mansfield to have a very dark dot. In that case, 30% of jobs are at risk of automations, whereas in other cities like, for example, London, the risk of automation is way lower. However, when we look at the displacement in different specific cities and what are the occupations that are going to cause this displacement, we can see that there are some variation across cities, but also some similarities. So we said that London is one of the cities with the lowest risk of automations. Yet 900,000 jobs of all the 3.6 million that we said are at risk in cities are all in London. And these jobs mostly are in sales assistant occupation and other administrative occupations. On the other hand, we said Mansfield is the city with the highest share of jobs at risk. One in three jobs in Mansfield is at risk of automation. That means 26,000 jobs, mostly again in sales assistant occupation, other administrative occupation, but as you can see, there is also storage occupations in Mansfield, and that is reflective of the kind of industry that are available in the market in Mansfield. So, what do the cities with the highest share of jobs at risk have in common? These cities tend to be less productive. They tend to have a lower share of high-skilled jobs. They're more reliant on welfare spending, and they have less knowledge-intensive jobs. all these traits together suggest that these places are more vulnerable to shifting the labor markets because they're weaker economies already, and they're likely to suffer more from any change. So this looks quite scary, because we always, because when you think one in three jobs is going to be automated, you can also think, okay, so what is going to happen to these people? However, this is not the first time we talk about industrial revolution. Actually, this is the fourth industrial revolution, and there has been changes in the labor market every year, continuously. So when we look at the data from the 1911, we find that actually automation and globalization have already changed the labor market a lot. In 1911, we can think about jobs like domestic servants and laundry workers. They used to be very popular jobs, especially in the south of England. But nowadays, we got electrical appliances such as washing machine, dishwasher. They have been replaced. They made a positive contribution to our life, but they actually displaced jobs in 1911. On the other end, if we look, for example, at the impact of automation combined with globalization, we can see what happened to the decline of the manufacturing and mining industries. Mining and manufacturing used to account for almost two-thirds of jobs in some parts of the North and the Midlands. And of course, this is a big chunk of jobs in that at that time. However, when we look at all these numbers in aggregate and we look at the change in time between 1911 and 2016, cities nowadays have got 60% more jobs than they used to have 100 of years ago. So yes, it looks scary, but cities have been able to adapt over time, change and create new jobs. And nowadays, most cities have got more jobs than they used to have in 1911. So what's going to happen this time? Probably this time is not going to be any different from previous times. And if we actually look at the type of jobs that are going to grow in the future, or the jobs that are more likely to grow in the future, obviously just taking into account the jobs that are available nowadays, because of course we can't make any predictions on the jobs that are going to emerge in the future, we can see that 1.4 million jobs are today in occupations that are likely to increase by 2030. So occupations that are going to see an increase in employment. And these jobs are actually evenly spread out across the country. So if we've previously seen a map that showed displacement across the country be completely different, actually the opportunities are spread out across the country. So there is opportunity for growth everywhere. Question is, what type of growth places are going to see? So when we look at the type of occupations that are likely to grow, we often think that it's going to be high-skill occupations that are going to likely to grow more and low-skill occupations to grow less. Actually, this is not true. There is potential for growth in different parts of the labor market. 50% of the growth will be brought forward by what are nowadays publicly funded occupations. So in previous presentations, we talked about the importance and the emergence of the health sector to respond to demographic changes. This is going to be one of the sectors where employment growth is likely to change, is probably likely to change and increase by 2030. But it's not the only one. Also, education is going to be increasingly important because of the appetite for lifelong learning and the increased take-up of education more generally. However, there's also going to be growth both in high-skill sector and low-skill sector. When we talk about low-skill sector, we can think of growth in sector like hospitality and trades and sport and fitness, for example, because the kind of jobs are more in demand nowadays than they used to be in the past, and we can expect this demand to increase in the future. And when we think about high-skill export jobs, we think about engineering, creative industries, those jobs that are going to be increasing in the future because of the skills they require. So analytical, interpersonal skills are going to be increasingly more important, and jobs that are made of these skills are going to likely to grow in the future. What it's interesting, though, is how the different types of jobs are going to play out around the country. So we just said that every place has the potential for growth. So almost 8% of jobs in every city are currently in occupations likely to grow. However, it's not the same type of jobs everywhere. So we can see that the lightest color is jobs in publicly funded occupations. And as we can see, it's almost evenly spread out across the country. So every country has got almost 50% of jobs likely to grow in occupations that are publicly funded. But when we look at the darker green and the lighter green, these two ones, we can see that the composition of the private sector jobs is what actually is going to make the difference for places. Places like Cambridge have got almost 0.5% of the job growth likely to be in high-skill occupations. Bradford, on the other hand, has only got 1 in 10 jobs likely to grow in high-skill occupations. So when we dig deeper in these different kinds of cities, we can say that in Bradford, yes, teaching and educational professionals is going to be the main driver of growth, as it is in Cambridge, for what we just said about education being one of the important sectors for growth. But the remaining growth is most likely to be brought forward by low-skill occupation, food and hospitality, elementary services. On the other hand, in Cambridge, reflecting also for the university presence in the city, teaching and occupational professional will be important, but natural science professional, artistic and creative industries are also going to be important. And these different these differences are actually important, not only because they tell us what the potential for growth are, but also what are the challenges for places. Because when we look together and we plot the share of jobs at risk of automation in cities, so that's the horizontal line, and the more you're closer to me, the higher is the risk, the share of jobs at risk of automation, and the share of jobs that are likely to grow in high-skill occupations, we see that the two things don't go together. And so the places that have got that are now more at risk of automation are also the one with the most vulnerable ones in terms of growth in the future, because the growth they're going to try, they're more likely to attract, is going to be in low-skill occupations. And as we've seen previously, these tend to relate to weaker economies. And so we need to do something about that. And we also need to do something about that because when we try to plot something like this with having the share of jobs at risk of displacement on the x-axis, but we try to plot it against the vote for Brexit, for example, we can see that the two things go together. So places that are with the most risk of automation are also places that tended to vote for Leave. So there is kind of a creation of a divide among the countries, with places that are more wealthy and have seen more growth in the past, taking a political line that is different from other parts of the country. And so we need to ensure that both parts of the countries actually can prosper and grow in the future. How do we do that? Well, in the past, for example, during the decline of the manufacturing and mining industries, the response from the government was to try to push people out of the labor market through incapacity benefits. And this obviously creates a number of implications, both related to the cost of these kind of interventions, but also the implication in terms of the labor market, because we are basically taking a chunk of the population, moving it out of the labor market, becomes unproductive. This time we should do things differently. And first of all, the first thing that we should work on is to prepare the people that are not yet in the labor market. So making sure that schools and higher education and further education are reflective of the changes in the labor market, so that businesses and schools and education providers can work together to ensure that the younger generation are endowed with the tools they need to succeed in the labor market. However, it's not only just about preparing new generations. 2/3 of the people that are going to be in work in 2030 are already in the labor market. And that means that we need to have a shift in the way we think about education. And it's not just something that is for the people, for the youngest. It's something that needs to be in everyone's life. We need to change our culture and move towards something more close to lifelong learning, upskilling, retraining, ensuring that everyone is endowed with the tools to actually make the most of the labor market, even if their jobs is gonna be displaced, even when the machines are gonna come. How do we make sure that people are actually able to interact with machines, make the most of the machines? And lastly, obviously, there's always going to be an element of compensation, because some people will lose out and some people will lose their jobs, and we need to do something for them. But this time, the compensation shouldn't come as a mere transfer of money. It should come as a mix. Compensation in terms of monetary terms, but also training opportunities so that these people can jump back in the labor market. And obviously, as we have seen so far, places have got different challenges. So one of the most important elements of this new strategy should be to reflect the different challenges in different places in different policies, so that actually places are allowed to have the tools to actually adjust and make the little tweaks in the labor market that are actually good for their economy. So that's me, if you got any questions.
Thanks, Alan. That was really, really interesting. I'm Jonathan Simnett from Hambleton Partners, and I'm on next, so don't run away, everybody. There seemed to be a theme underlying everything that you said, and the theme appeared to be we have to ensure that basically the north of England, because that's what all that was about, doesn't decline any further. I think the reality is that the North has been in continuous decline. No matter what public policy has done, no matter how much money is spent influencing people, no matter how much money has been spent on retraining, isn't it about time that we started to engage with an idea of simply downsizing those cities? Because the reason we're having this discussion here is to ensure that the people who are there have something to do. And it's about time we said, they're never going to have anything to do. Let's rewild half of Middlesbrough. You know, let's bulldoze Hartlepool. You might sort of suspect I'm exaggerating for effect. I am slightly, but you know, I'm exaggerating to get at a real truth. Is that there are large parts of this country now that essentially have no reason to exist, other than for people to have somewhere to live, and you know, for most of the regions. Most of the regions, the amount of economic activity is way more than 50% state spending. So, you know, you could make the argument it's the economics of the madhouse. So anyway, to get to the point, yeah, is it about time we stopped pretending we can regenerate places that only existed because of a certain place in history and a certain sort of industry?
So I think the answer to your question is twofold. On one hand, I think we've looked at this in the past, and some part of the reason why places in the north have been struggling in the last 100 years is because they substituted low-skilled jobs that were available in 1911 with other low-skilled jobs. And of course, these jobs haven't brought the growth that other places have seen. So one answer to this question could be to twist, to make sure that these places become attractive to business investment in high-skill sector jobs. And that means a bunch of reforms. It's not just about upskilling people, but it's making sure that transport within cities is good so that people can connect to the opportunities. It's about making sure that these places are attractive and offer the office space, for example. That is what businesses are looking for. So, for example, now we're talking about startups and self-employment, and these type of businesses have got different needs in terms of office space, for example, to warehouses. So we need to ensure that cities reflect the different needs of the new labor market, basically, and the new industries emerging. So there could be potential there. On the other end, we also need to not forget that different type of businesses look for different features in different cities. So although it's true that high-skill export jobs congregate in the greater southeast, and that's because they're willing to pay a premium to be close to each other and to exchange knowledge, it is also true that some businesses prefer other locations around the country because they are low-skill business, they want cheap land and a lot of low-skill workers. And that's what kind of the north of England is offering at the time. That's what we need to change. We need to ensure that these places don't just offer this type of like cheap labor, cheap land for the businesses, but are also able to integrate this offer with high-skill export jobs that are actually going to drive up the standards in the country. I don't think just public jobs would be enough to increase or to change the source of the north.
As far as I see it, the problem is education right at the beginning. When in the poorer north, and quote me if I'm wrong here, or tell me if I'm wrong, it's the primary school education whereby the kids aren't, 30% of the northern kids, if we might call it that, basically can't read. So they don't have comprehension. So they can't do the skills of whatever. And then it, later on in life, it comes productivity. This country has a massive productivity problem. How do you see, you know, what's government, in your opinion, or whatever, whoever you've been talking to, how are we going to solve this problem? Because the problem starts at the education, the primary school, and then it latterly becomes a problem with our lack of productivity because we don't have the skill set.
Yeah. I think the newly announced industrial strategies and their focus on the local industrial strategy is going to play an important part on this, because the local industrial strategies are mainly focused on skills as one of the elements, not only just industries and the different pillars the government wants to bring forwards in terms of investments, but also skills, so making sure that the people are actually prepared to get into the labor market. So, for example, since 2010, the government has been investing a lot in improving the reading and numeracy skills in schools, and has brought some progress, but there is more that needs to be done. So that's in terms of preparing. Whereas in terms of productivity, we need to understand where the productivity problem is. And in terms of skills related to productivity, the government recently announced the National Retraining Scheme. It's the way they put it for now is just a retraining scheme for the construction and the digital industries, but with the aim to be enlarged to a wider, like to all industries, with the idea of retaining precisely those people that are going to be hit the most by automation and ensuring they're going to jump back into the labor market in doing something meaningful and productive for the country.
Can I therefore ask, what does this mean in future for employee costs for businesses? Because the higher skilled employee has to be paid more, but if you're reducing the number of lower skilled jobs, that will then create a bit of a balance. I mean, where does this leave us in future?
Well, I'm assuming that we always talk about automation and we've been talking about how automation and artificial intelligence are going to displace jobs. But as we've seen throughout the morning, automation and artificial intelligence are going to bring massive benefits in terms of production and cost reduction to companies. And I would imagine the two things could compensate each other. So yes, it's true, employment costs could increase if we focus on just high-skilled jobs, but these high-skilled jobs are going to be more productive to bring more wealth to the economy. So that could be an option.
Just one point of view is your data and your trend analysis. You see how far it's going out. How have you adopted for the changes that are going into codifying employees' personalities and etc.? So, just to put some colour in the background of the picture, there, you know, job turnover is surging as tenure is sinking. You know, 7 years ago, it was 6 years. As of last year, according to Deloitte, it's 3.6 years. So it's 20 jobs that you're going to have over a course of a 50-year long life, and probably a little bit longer if you leave school at 16 into reflecting some of the northern points. So I love the bulldozing point of view because it calls to action a big concern. How this data has clearly got a lot of engineering going into it, but just what's your thoughts on, how the recruitment markets, the 500 billion markets changing, and how it could possibly affect this with AI and machine learning coming into CEO overviews and looking down on their staff and recruitment policies?
So in this piece, we just looked at the occupations and how they're going to change in the, like, what are the effects for the labor market. However, we are doing actually more work on what are the type of skills that are actually behind these occupations. So what are actually the skills that are more in demand, how they're transferable from one work to another, and what are the implications in terms of the labor market and in terms of the people themselves and their ability to actually change and develop throughout the years so that they get a meaningful career, even if with a lot of changes throughout the years, because a career for life doesn't exist anymore. So no one is going to be in the same jobs they used to be 15 years ago. And so people need to be ready to transfer their skills in multiple jobs.
I know that Facebook are exploring options to personalise education through their foundation. Are there any of those initiatives here in the UK, or are we sort of doing anything in terms of how education is actually being managed and given to the people that most need it?
On the top of my head, I can think of an interesting project that has started in the US but is going to come to the UK soon, which is called the Cities of Learning. It's basically a project. It's basically an app that people can download and use to basically have different tokens when they complete a course. And so that makes it gamifies the education in a way that makes it entertaining for people, and that makes people improve in their skills. So it was trialed. This project was the first established in Chicago, but is now going to be implemented in some cities in the UK. So we can see how the experiment actually is going to work out.
What is the risk that government pushes back on AI and regulation rather than trying to train people for the future, instead be on their side per se in terms of preventing job losses in the low-skilled industries?
So are you asking about whether the government is going to prevent artificial intelligence because of the job
losses? At the speed
losses?
It's happening, yes.
Okay, well, if you look at the industrial strategy paper they released in November, apparently artificial intelligence and automation are one of the main pillars, and the government wants to make the country as one of the leading countries in the world in terms of artificial intelligence. So from that point of view, it seems that the government is embracing artificial intelligence and is trying to make the most of it. And as I said, I think artificial intelligence and automation are going to be great opportunities for the country in terms of productivity and wealth creations. So then it's just a matter of redistributing and make sure that the people that lose jobs can have access to other jobs or are compensated for it. So for as far as I can see, the government has been positive about it so far.
Thank you, Elena.
Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.